Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome to the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Kavanagh. With me, as always, is Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How are you, Randy?
Quite lovely, thank you.
Right, you look lovely.
I feel lovely.
Great. Also joining us, as always, is Mr. David Edmondson. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. However, I had a friend over today, and he was a little down. You know, he'd had a bit of a problem in his relationships, and you know, he asked me, he's like, David, do you know how to make your girlfriend scream during sex? He said, call her and tell her about it. Justin, how the hell are you today?
I'm good. Silly, silly man.
Randy, how the hell are you today?
I have so many questions. but I'm not going to sidetrack us. I'm not going to derail us this time.
Okay. You see, in the scenario here, the gentleman calling about his girlfriend is calling her about sex that he had with other people.
Right. No, I get. Okay. All right.
So he was. It was yeah. Infidelity on his part, and it upset his lady friend, and that's why she screamed. Mm. See, it's kind of like a riddle, like the Sphinx riddle. Like you think, like, oh yeah, how are we gonna make her scream if she's involved in it? But see, she's not involved in it. You know, traditionally, she's tangentially part of the story.
There you go.
It's like a rhombus.
She's cucking it up from the sidelines.
She is definitely. Justin, what are we talking about today?
Your favorite.
Woohoo! I love it.
We're talking about the cinema and how Universal Pictures and AMC Theaters have reached a deal that shortens the time between movie premieres in theaters to when it hits other platforms, like digital video on demand. Nice. And this new deal makes it so that Universal can move its films after just 3 weeks in theaters. In most cases, we're more familiar with like a 90-day window, but that has since changed, which I find remarkable because weren't these two like kind of at war, like a Hatfields and McCoys, not too long ago? Once Universal started the whole VOD during the pandemic.
Yeah, but Universal wanted to completely eliminate the theatrical window. So I mean, that was, you know, and that was I doubt something that they consulted with, you know, NATO or AMC or, you know, Regal. I doubt they went and said, "Oh, we're going to do this." I think they took movies that, you know, both of them had spent money to promote, you know, through trailers and stuff when movie theaters were open. And now they weren't going to be able to reap the benefits of the free promotion they offered these films. And so they didn't like that, like for Trolls 2, for example, you know, they've been running trailers for Trolls 2 for, you know, 6 to 9 months under the pretense that it would pay off in the future when that movie came up. People were like, oh, yeah, I saw the trailer at AMC. Let me go to AMC and watch this movie. But I think they felt, you know, a little hoodwinked, so to speak. Ray knows all about hoodwinking people, right? He's a hoodwinker.
I haven't hoodwinked in years.
not since you got the new hip.
Right. I'm just not as spry as I used to be.
Oh, geez.
Yes, some of the stuff for the deal that kind of surprised me was that it was a multi-year deal. Like this isn't like a small stopgap just for COVID. You know, I don't think they gave us the exact amount of years, but they used the word years plural. Interesting enough is that, you know, part of the deal was that AMC is going to get part of the premium VOD revenue that Universal and Focus Pictures will reap by having a VOD service. And AMC is also going to be launching its own video on demand service called AMC Theaters On Demand. So I'm assuming that part of the deal is that they'll be able to stream Universal Pictures and Focus Entertainment Pictures and, you know, share the revenue the opposite way. From Universal, I think this could be a really good platform because, you know, often we see movies that, you know, they're there for 1 week and you just know this is a dud. But unfortunately, you know, they're obligated to exhibit it within the movie theater for that 90-day window that Justin had mentioned. Now, if there's a turd of a movie, they can just be like, you know what, this isn't working out. We're just going to go VOD as soon as the 17 days are up. You know, I don't think this is something that they'll utilize for, like, the Fast and the Furious. You know, they have the option to do it, you know, different with each movie. I'm sure Fast and the Furious don't want to keep the movie theater because they'll want that, you know, $1.2 billion that it's sure to earn. But for something like the new Minions movie, you know, I could see them, you know, doing this for 17 days and then at the 17-day mark just be like, okay, VOD.
Sure. I mean, and there's something to be said about a Fast and Furious movie where you want a cinematic experience, and it's better to view that in a theater versus your own home. But just taking precautions, I mean, I know it's delayed till next year, which is great and all, because then we can have a better understanding of where we'll be, you know, whatever, fast forward a year from now, or 9 months, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, I can tell you right now that I'm in no rush to go to a cinema by the end of this year. So, I mean, if I get the opportunity to watch it at home, you know, we talk about this all the time, and we pick and choose which movies we want to do. But I feel like even premium cable channels like HBO are getting stuff much faster than they used to. Mm-hmm. You know, like Joker is already available on HBO, and that came out in October of last year, and it's already been on the channel for over a month. And you know, there was a time when you had to wait a year before it was on something like HBO or Showtime or Cinemax.
Yeah. So, and that's just a byproduct.
Some wheeling and dealing going on to get this stuff out there sooner rather than later.
And that's a byproduct of, you know, Netflix basically murdering the home video market. You know, it used to be they wasn't on HBO because they wanted to milk every dollar they could out of, you know, the home video market. But now that that's just been pretty much wiped away by streaming services, I think that's why we're seeing stuff on HBO. I do applaud Universal. Universal and Paramount have really done right by consumers. You know, as soon as it became apparent that movie theaters have been closed for a long while, Universal and Paramount basically said, okay, all our movies that you're going to see, we're just pushing them all back a year. You know, it's Warner Brothers and Disney. They're kind of like, they keep moving it. You know, they keep being reactionary. They want to get their movies out as soon as possible. You know, Universal and Paramount, you know, whether it's, you know, Jurassic World, whether it's Fast and the Furious, you know, movies like that, they just are like, you know what? We'll see you next year, guys.
Those are billion-dollar movies.
Yeah. But, I mean, so is, you know, Tenet and Black Widow. You know, those are potentially billion-dollar. Mulan. You know, these are potentially billion-dollar movies, and that they're willing to gamble, you know, a month-to-month kind of, like, release window. And so it's just, I feel a lot better of how Universal. However, you know, when we think of these are all the movie studios are owned by these massive conglomerates. You know, Warner Brothers owned by AT&T, you know, Viacom owns Universal. You know, Disney is a conglomerate on its own. So, I mean, they're not really hurting for money, but, you know, it is a trickle-down thing. So, like, Universal Studios is closed. You know, all the people, the hundreds of thousands of people that work in the movie theaters. So I understand their desire to reopen. I just, with everything we know about the virus, you know, it sounds like movie theaters are, everything they say about the virus, about being indoors for long periods of time and close proximity of people and, you know, stuff like that, it just spells movie theater, so.
Right. That's sad. And then, I mean, obviously the, you know, you can't watch a movie without credits rolling for 10 goddamn minutes, and all those people are contract workers, and so they're obviously out of work too, and that's just, that's really, really sad.
Yeah, it's a weird time. I mean, we're going to, 10 years from now, we're going to look back and, like, you know, every year, the year of the box office, you know, keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we're going to get to, like, 2020. It's going to be, like, 1/20th of what every other year was. We're going to be like, what? Oh, yeah, that was the year we had COVID.
Right. What, do you have any idea what the number one movie of 2020 is so far?
Oh, I forgot. Do you have it in front of you? Is that why you're asking?
No. Yeah. I have no idea. But, I mean, it's a January, February, or second week of March movie.
Let's see here. Survey says, Bad Boys for Life, number one movie.
There you go.
Number two movie of the year is Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's fantastic.
Number three.
Which already has a sequel, by the way, with a release date. I don't have it in front of me, but they have announced it.
How exciting would it be if Bad Boys for Life was the number one?
What was number three?
Doolittle, and then Birds of Prey, then The Invisible Man, Call of the Wild, and Onward.
Wow. And then the world ended.
Yeah. It's
pretty much.
Because we didn't get A Quiet Place 2.
Right. You know, Onward, you know, that's a big Pixar film, and that, you know, that was right at when things started shutting down. So, I mean, that's worldwide box office, $104 million. You know, that was probably something that would have made, you know, $750 to $1 billion.
Right.
And, you know, it made $100 million.
And it went to Disney Plus, right?
Yeah, it went to Disney Plus.
Yeah, almost immediately. That one didn't have the long hang time.
Yeah.
yeah,
that some of the other scheduled movies did, you know?
Yeah, once it became apparent that it was this wasn't going to happen, they pretty much cut bait and was like, you guys go, enjoy.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
What can you do?
I don't know. Call of the Wild is number 6, and that's got Harrison Ford in it.
That's true. I'll tell you what you can do. You can watch Bill and Ted Face the Music on Tuesday, September 1st, which is exciting because it's going to debut both in theaters, assuming they're open, and on demand. So that's pretty sweet. I can't wait. As someone that has been complaining about not wanting to spend money on VOD, this is definitely one that I want to support since we've been talking about a potential sequel since as long as I can ever remember.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I'm usually the type of guy that'll wait until it's on a streaming platform that I already pay a monthly service fee for. But this one, just because there is so much nostalgia behind it, and because, I mean, we've all talked about wanting this movie to come out for years now, and the fact that it's actually finally arriving, I got to be there to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be the third premium VOD I've bought since the quarantine. I got Scoob, and I got Trolls 2, and now I'll get Bill and Ted Face the Music.
What were you going to say, Randy?
Nothing significant, as usual.
Everything you say is significant.
Everything. It was interesting to watch the Comic-Con at Home panel for Bill and Ted's. I think it was the only Comic-Con at Home panel. I take it back. I watched the Kevin Smith, Evening with Kevin Smith as well, and it was terrible because they inconsistently bleeped him. Like, every so often a fuck or a shit would get through, and it was not a very good panel. But the Bill and Ted one was pretty good. You know, had Keanu Reeves, had Alex Winter. Had Dean Parisot, the director who also did Galaxy Quest and stuff like that, had the two new actresses who were going to play Bill and Ted's daughters. It was interesting to note that neither one of them had seen a second of the film before they auditioned. So that was kind of fun.
They never seen the first two?
Yeah, they'd never seen Bill and Ted's before.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
And so one of them told a fun story about when she got the email, she was with her boyfriend. And she was, I'm sorry, I don't know their names, and I apologize for that, that her boyfriend, when he saw the email, just started like going into like a Bill and Ted's voice. And since she had no idea anything about Bill and Ted, he's like, excellent. And she's like, who are they? Who is this? What have you turned into? What is going on? She was from Australia, so I guess it didn't hit down there. But like everyone she was telling was like, oh my God, so exciting. And so she got excited about it. They did drop a new trailer. It was a lot of fun. You know, it did focus more on, you know, the story of it. You know, we see, you know, Bill and Ted go back in time or go into the future to kind of steal the music from themselves. We see death, we see hell. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm very excited for Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Sweet.
Even if it won't play at AMC and Regal and Cinemark.
All the places. Alex had never seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure until a couple months ago, so that was fun to watch it for the first time with someone.
Yeah, and Bogus Journey totally stands up too. It's actually Bogus Journey is pretty funny.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that in a long time. It's been years, but I'll definitely watch it again prior to watching Face the Music. So I have a month to recoup.
Yeah, but Station.
Right. Yeah, it always trips me up that he's the bad guy from Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, you can do other things too. You didn't die on that plane.
Or he did, and that's why he became
that's
deaf.
True, that's why he's the Grim Reaper.
Best 2 out of 3.
Right.
Yeah, I love Bill and Ted too. Even if it ends with them having the song, but no, I guess that was not the song.
It's all a ruse, yeah. That's not accurate.
And we got that epic Kiss song at the end. God gave rock and roll to you.
Yeah. You like Kiss?
God gave rock and roll. I saw him in concert once on Halloween.
That's a big deal.
It was the longest concert I've ever been to. I take it back. I've been to a couple festivals, so I guess those were longer. But it was part of the Kiss Psycho Circus tour, so they had like an actual circus they were traveling with. And so there was like a 2-hour pre-circus, and then the Smashing Pumpkins came on, and they played for like an hour. And there was like a 2 more hour of circus, and then Kiss played for like 3 hours, and there was like a 45-minute like fireworks show at the end. It was a lot, and it was at Dodger Stadium.
Sounds like a long night.
It was, considering the people I went with were huge Kiss fans, but I was mostly there to see Smashing Pumpkins. And
so you could have gone after 2 hours. And you're like, I'm good.
Yeah, but I mean, they put on a good show, so it was worth, you know, kind of checking out, like, in the early days of, like, just killer stage shows before holograms and stuff.
Right. Laser light
pre-holograms.
Shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. more fire and makeup.
We were talking about Bogus Journey, Randy, and what are your thoughts on Bogus Journey? This is a pro Bogus Journey podcast.
All right. Well, I haven't seen Bogus Journey in probably at least a couple decades. So my memory of it is it was not as strong as the first one. And it wasn't, it was to the point where I didn't feel it had the rewatchability.
Yeah.
But
watch it now.
Yeah, I need to watch it in my adulthood. Yeah.
See, I'm in the same boat as you, Randy. Because, you know, I saw it when it came out. I saw it again a couple years later. But, I mean, it's easily been over 20 years since I've seen it.
Yeah, it's like the first one is so much fun. And it's, like, fun and frivolous. And everybody's having a good time. And it's just silly. And then the other one... Yeah, exactly. Then the stakes were higher. And all of a sudden, death is involved. And it's just not as much fun anymore. I need to rewatch it.
Did you ever watch the cartoon?
I did watch some of the cartoon, and I think I even had a Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure action figure, like in their little Wild Stallions outfits with their guitars and amps and stuff like that. I don't remember. I think Kenner made them.
Were they based on the animated series?
Okay. Yeah, definitely not the movie. But yeah, I watched a little bit of it. That came out, in my memory, that was around the same era as that Back to the Future animated series.
Yeah.
That was short-lived.
And I think maybe even like Beetlejuice and Alf had a cartoon. Gordon.
Oh yeah. That the only way you could get any kind of Beetlejuice toys were from the animated series.
Speaking of the action figure spotlight that Randy just put on, you know, we've been talking for several weeks about the purchasing that X-Men Legends Marvel Sentinel, and I actually pulled the trigger yesterday and I purchased the Sentinel. I'm no longer just all talk.
Lydia,
nice.
I have it on my screen all day today. Like, cause I was like, oh, I'm gonna order it. You know, I clicked the little box. Like, yes, I agree to the terms, but I hadn't pulled the trigger. And
thank Cameron. I'll buy. Let's keep calling.
I know. During a call today, I just pulled it up on my computer and I was like, fuck, I totally need to buy this because I got scared because I pulled it up on my work computer, but it wasn't showing that you could still buy it. It had said, you know, on the bottom it says like in production. And so I was like, oh my God, did they freaking close it? And so I got scared. And then so I pulled it up on my personal computer and it was still available to buy. I freaked out. I was like, oh man, maybe they pulled the plug just because they already had enough backers, you know, and they want to make more. But I have to imagine the more you have, the cheaper it is to make.
You're blocked from buying other companies' toys from your work computer.
Yeah.
there's irony there.
I know.
So, okay, so their target was 6,000 backers. How much would you guess they have right now?
They have 11,805, including
Yeah, dance. I also have it up.
I have it up on my screen right now. You all are a bunch of cheaters. No, that's almost double. How crazy is that? That is so good for them.
I am an exclusive group of 11,804 other people.
I know. I'm totally getting it. In fact, I'll probably do it tonight. Just because I convinced myself that they're going to close it early, and I got scared.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think they ever would close it early. The reason being, Hasbro likes money. And if they can keep making more, you know.
Yeah. I haven't got the place I'm going to put it. It's going to be right here. It's going to be marvelous.
Yeah, in a year.
Next year when I get it. Yeah. A little over a year. August 24th, so 13 months. I've completely forgotten about this like 3 or 4 times, and then it's just going to show up my front door because I don't check my email.
I'm excited. Congratulations. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah. You are now a part of the tribe.
Yeah. It is officially the most I think I've ever spent on any kind of toy.
What a nerd.
Shut up. How many Xbox Ones do you own?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I bet you don't.
I have bought a lot of Xbox Ones, but one was a gift to somebody else, and one was purchased, and then I resold it and put that money towards the Xbox One X. And then I had the launch one. So, 4 have been purchased in my name. But, I mean, I would argue that the entertainment value and hours that have been put into my Xboxes... have paid for itself in spades.
I would say so. I'm not disputing that. Saying about form.
But that's neither here nor there.
we're not talking about me. We're talking about you.
No, we're talking about Joss Whedon, because it wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't talking about Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon. It's just something that we do on this show. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point prior to us recording that Snyder was said that he'd literally blow that fucking thing up before using any of Whedon's footage. And that's pretty hardcore. And then he went on to say that I would destroy the movie, I would set it on fire before I use a single frame that I did not photograph. That's a fucking hard fact. Yikes. What do you say to that?
What can you say to that?
Yeah.
Well, it's spoken like a true director or somebody who is really emotionally connected to the material. You can tell that he takes it very seriously and he's very passionate about it. And I think that also speaks volumes about what he must have been going through the entire time Joss Whedon was shooting stuff to finish that version of the movie.
Right. I mean, I have to admit that like when Ron Howard came in to finish Solo, I think there was a certain relief that kind of came over me when I heard that Joss Whedon was coming over to direct Justice League, or finish it anyway.
Right.
I was like, oh, well, it's in very good and capable hands. You know,
yeah, we have a lot of faith in the guy.
Right. You know, obviously this is prior to me knowing anything about him being mean or abusive on set or whatever the case may be. I wouldn't be surprised that the guy has been in the business for a long time. And, you know, when he made Avengers and it made $1 billion in like 8 seconds, that's a big deal. You know, maybe he just sort of became a monster. I don't know. I don't really care. I hate that he's terrible. I've always admired the man, and it breaks my heart to hear stories of him being terrible. But either way, I do find it remarkable that Zack Snyder would go on record saying something like that. That blows me away. Just from like a professional standpoint, that just seems kind of crazy. Mm. I would definitely play the bigger person in that situation, especially knowing I'm sure he has a pretty realistic account of what it was like on set. You know, people would probably call him and tell him like, man, you know what. While I'm sympathetic to what your family's going through, you wouldn't believe the shit that Joss Whedon's doing on set, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that he is no stranger to the stories that are being told. And I just think that it could have been a moment where he was a little bit more of a class act as opposed to taking that approach. Maybe I'm crazy, I don't know, but that's just the way I would have handled it.
Yeah.
David, you always like to say nice things about Zack Snyder. What are your thoughts?
Well, I always like to let you guys talk for a while before I come in, because since I'm the, you know, it's how brave of Mr. Snyder to come out and be so passionate about his film that he basically cared so much about someone else finishing his work that he decided to take his name off as the director. Oh, wait, no, he didn't do that. He left his name on as a director, as an executive producer, you know, as a screenplay by credit, you know, and now that this has become a movement and it's the popular thing to do, it just like yesterday, like we talked about last week, it just reeks of revisionist history and, you know, false bravado. You know, he's now in a position where he can make that happen, but for well over a year he wasn't. And, you know, I completely understand if he was quiet because, you know, he's a professional or whatever, but, you know, you can't. It's very hard for me to take it serious when it's just such an epic flip-flop, you know, from, you know, discussions earlier on in the Justice League. And so now that the Justice League, which is a term I just heard this weekend for the theatrical cut of the Justice League, because Joss Whedon get it, Justice.
Yeah, I get it.
I don't know. It just seems like
well,
a very...
Well, I mean, you can't say anything bad about it when there's money involved where... you know, it could hurt the box office performance, or
but why can't you do it now? Sales.
I think that ship has sailed, and there aren't too many people going out to buy the movie.
I mean, I don't think it becomes less professional to shit on another director's work.
I'm just saying that, but if he would have gone out with a sign in the front of the movie theater saying "fuck this movie, don't go see it," that there are people that probably would have been loyal to that and not gone and seen it.
Right, and I agree that you should never do that, but to do it later, it's like, you know, it defangs and deballs the argument. You know, like, if he were truly passionate about it, you know, he would be like, you know, if this is something, I would burn this fucking thing to the ground before I let anything I didn't shoot be part of this film, then he had the opportunity to do that when the movie came out. Right. If he's like, fuck this, burn this shit to the ground, I didn't shoot this whole movie, this is a travesty and an abortion of cinema, fuck all this shit. But he didn't. He waited for, you know, a year and a half to go by. He waited for other people to rally around him to elevate his cause, to make his passion a reality. And now he's standing on the back of the Release the Snyder Cut fans and saying, like, I know you guys love me, so fuck Joss Whedon. You know, if he was passionate about what he was saying, he would have done it a long time ago. And maybe he didn't because he was going through his personal issues, you know, which are very real, and I would never, you know, I hope to never experience the pain that he experienced. But, you know, what he says doesn't ring true to me. It rings that he was surrounded by minions who loved him, and he was just trying to incite them and be like, oh yeah, I'm here, blah blah blah, we're awesome. So yeah, I mean, like, I've said it again, I hope it's amazing. I love Superman, I love Batman, I love the Justice League. If this is the seminal Justice League film, I will be ecstatic, and I will love it, and I will give it its honest and just desserts.
I think Randy's finally seen the Justice League. So
I finally did. And now there's another version I have to see.
And it's like 18 hours.
Oh, my God.
If you were to get this at the video store, it would be two cassettes.
Yeah. Intermission. Popcorn.
Well, I hope it all works out, and I hope that he dials it back a notch, because I don't want some hammy, obnoxious director shitting on something that they were a part of for so long. That always gives me sour grapes, as it were.
Right, and Joss Whedon was playing in the sandbox that Zack Snyder created. It's not like, you know, it's not like Zack Snyder went out and recast, you know, Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman and Cyborg and stuff like that. These are people that were cast that, you know, based on an original script by, you know, Goyer and Snyder and Deborah Snyder. So, I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know, this rings douchey.
Right. What can you do? Speaking of douchey, you have a list for us.
Hell yeah, I have a list. It's the 10 box office bombs that are now considered classics.
Perfect. How far back? It. What is the most recent and what is the oldest on this?
All list? Right. The most recent one. Let's see if there's anything really recent. Mid-90s. Okay. Mid to late 90s is the earliest one.
Let's give it a time to become a classic. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number 10 on the list. I don't think anyone on this podcast likes this movie. Tyrone.
That's funny.
I jest. It is Tron. And obviously we are all big fans of Tron, but none more than Mr. Van Dyke, who has admitted to being part of several Tron groups. So I'll let Randy talk about Tron.
Now when it first came out, I honestly don't remember whether or not I saw it on the big screen. In fact, I think I wasn't introduced to it until a neighbor kid had these like cool transparent action figures for Tron. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know? And then I remember going to Disneyland and going on the People Mover and going through the Tron experience there. And it was pretty badass. And I'm like, what is this movie? I want to experience it. And it wasn't until years later that I finally got to see it on the big screen. Of course, before then, I finally saw it on VHS, probably somewhere in the early to mid 80s. But ever since then, it's been ingrained in me. I just loved the movie. I loved arcade games, and I loved the idea of getting sucked inside of one, I think. So it just seemed so cool at the time. And I've had a fascination for it ever since. Now, because I seem to remember being kind of surrounded by it in the 80s, I didn't think it wasn't popular. I didn't think it was a flop. I just thought, you know, if anybody hadn't seen it or wasn't familiar with it, I'm like, oh, well, you know, They must have been in the same cocoon that I was for a little while before finally being exposed to it. But I had no idea. People actually actively didn't like the movie. But, man, I love it. And I'm glad that it has gone on to become a classic and a favorite of many people. And David's right. I am a member of a bunch of Tron fan Facebook groups. And I will say this. I mentioned it earlier before we started recording, but I want to reiterate it for the world to hear. I appreciate those groups so much more than the Star Wars fan groups that I'm in, because you know what you don't experience in most other fandoms is the toxicity that you do with the Star Wars fans. I'm still a giant Star Wars geek and I love it to death, and I have appreciation for all of the movies, but holy shit, if that's not just a cesspool of people looking to pick a fight. But you don't experience that with Tron. So bringing it back around to our favorite,
Mitron Blu-ray says it's a classic, so it must be true.
It must be, yeah. And I have that same Blu-ray edition that you do that came with both movies.
Yeah, and nice. And not to harp on the toxicity of the Star Wars fandom, it's not so much that they're toxic, it's that they're just unoriginal. Like, I've seen the same, they're all saying the exact same thing, and they're all posting the same memes. If you're gonna shit on it, be original, guys. Be original. You guys can do better. Be better at trolling. All right. Well, number 9 on the list, and it was very near and dear to Mr. Cavender's heart. I remember I saw this on a rainy day. It was 1997, I believe. I was at a Blockbuster Music. If you guys can remember that, they had Blockbuster Video and they had a Blockbuster Music, and they were clearancing out all of their like books and stuff. And I got a bunch of books for like 80% off. And my buddy's like, "Hey, let's go to the movies and see Starship Troopers. You want to see it?" I'm like, "Yeah, I want to see that movie." And Mr. Verhoeven made. If this movie came out today, it would be heralded as like the greatest war satire of all time.
Right.
But it was in a pre-9/11 era, and I don't think its genius was appreciated. So, Justin, this is your film. This is like top 10 Justin film.
Dude, yeah. I saw 3 times in the theater, so a lot of the money it made was from me. November 7th, 1997. Yep. And then I saw it again. That was a Friday. Then I saw it again on... funny story. Okay. Saw it on that Friday. Saturday, my girlfriend broke up with me. And I will never forget, on the way to go out on a date with her, we were just going to go have like Chinese food kind of thing. But I stopped and got her flowers. And that song, Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil, was playing on the radio. And now I'm like all rocking out because, you know how it goes like... Da-na-na, and I got all excited. And... every time I hear that song on the radio, just random, like, you know, once every 2 or 3 years, I'm just, like, sad. I'm like, I heard this song just from my girlfriend with me in 1997. And then I saw it again the next day, November 9th, both your friend Chung's birthday and my mother's birthday. Took her to see Starship Troopers for her birthday. I'm a good son. Thank you.
Now, was the thought of seeing Starship Troopers too much for your girlfriend? That's why she broke up with you?
No, she didn't see it with me. I saw it with my buddy Brian Gregory. And then just the next day, you know, Friday I hung out with Brian. Saturday was going to be date night with the girl. And then Sunday was, you know, birthday celebration with the ma.
Nice.
It's a busy weekend, Dave.
It was.
I remember in 97 when I saw it, I was in college at the time, and I was I went with a group of other film students. We were killing time between classes, and I had heard about the movie, but I knew absolutely nothing about it. So I went into it almost as blind as going into that Palm Springs movie that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And holy crap, I fell in love with it, and I've been in love with it ever since.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was watching it the other day, and, you know, the whole movie, they're talking about, gotta get the bugs. And then when we finally see the bugs, they're way bigger. So really the people are the bugs.
Right.
Yeah, and I just love what it has to say about, like, fascism and, you know, just you have to be in the military if you want to have any kind of voice. And just this, like, faceless enemy, the war will never, never end. And, you know, they don't even try to, like, villainize the bugs. They don't try to, you know... we know nothing about the bugs other than they're on this other planet and they're fighting us because we're trying to kill them.
Right. And they hurl their spore across the galaxy to kill us.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And then, I mean, ultimately they're colonizing, right? That the humans are colonizing their planets. It's like fucking Columbus. Like, hey, we found this sweet place. We're going to make camp. And then they get murdered. It's pretty intense. Fucking love
it. We discovered this place with people on it already.
Right. What is the moral difference, if any, between a citizen and a civilian? It's a great question.
It is. Number 8 on the list has become quite the Halloween classic. It's the Disney movie Hocus Pocus, starring Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathy Najimy.
You know, I just saw this movie about 2 years ago, I think, for the first time ever. And it's fun. It's silly. I mean, had I seen it when I was younger, it probably would have connected with me more, you know? Mm-hmm. But looking at it now, it just seems like, oh, yeah, that looks like 90s cheesy, you know?
Right. I feel like an asshole for never seeing it because, like, everyone loves it and they all Instagram it all the time during Halloween. And
oh, totally. Yeah.
I've just never been a part of it and I feel bad.
Yeah.
It's that and the Nightmare Before Christmas. Those are the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make a point of watching it for Halloween this year.
Maybe yeah. I'll
do that. You might be glad you did.
Yeah, Alex really likes
it. Watch Along Party. Next on the list is probably one of the most depressing movies ever. It is Alfonso Cuarón's 2016 film, Children of Men.
Yes. I did see that in the theater.
Yes.
It was pretty epic.
Yeah. Saw with Tortuga. And we went to fucking Flame Broiler, and I got one of those gross fatty chicken pieces, and it was my first bite, and it totally just grossed me out, and, you know, reason number 972 why I'm a vegetarian now. Because it was just fucking, you know how awful that is, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just that rubbery, gross, tendon-y piece, and you're just like, why am I eating this shit? And it was my first bite, and it just, not only did the movie depress the shit out of me, but it ruined my dinner, too. Everything sucked about that night.
That's what's different from you. I take the rubbery piece, I spit it out, and I put it on my tray, and I enjoy the rest of my bowl.
I can't do that. I lose my appetite. It grosses me out.
All right. The next movie on the list stars a little actor that I think you guys have heard about. A little guy named Kurt Russell in a movie called The Thing.
Yeah.
Ooh. You know, when it came out, it was not the hit because it came out a couple weeks after E.T. And since it was the exact opposite representation of aliens, audiences, they went with the happy alien instead of The Thing. I haven't seen this movie in probably 15 years. What about you, Randy? Have you seen The Thing recently?
In fact, I've only ever seen it once, and it was recently. It was also probably about 2 years ago. I was on a tear in 2018 watching all these movies I hadn't seen, apparently, like Focus and The Thing. But
double feature.
Seriously. I got a kick out of it. I really dig it a lot. I like how just over-the-top kind of gory it was, and I've since gone on to actually look and see how they did certain like practical visual effects, and it's just amazing to see how much planning went into that and how much they did
pioneering.
It really was pioneering, yeah. With really no map of how you could do something like that. They had to figure it out. I really appreciated that. I thought it was cool.
Next on the list is. It's a film that I remember, it's very divisive, and I remember loving this movie because it had, like, the multiple endings, and it was starred the comedy powerhouses of Christopher Lloyd, Madeline Kahn, Martin Mull, Mike McKean, and Tim Curry, and, of course, Clue, the whodunit based off of the popular board game. I freaking love this movie. I'm unapologetic about it. My wife absolutely hates this movie with like just the unbridled passion of a thousand suns, and I will probably be divorcing her because of it. But what do you guys think about Clue?
Yeah, it was fun. In fact, because they had the multiple endings, the newspapers started like saying which ending was in which screen, just so you didn't get like cheated out of your money and stuff.
So you didn't get hoodwinked.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. You don't get too many theater gimmicks anymore, and that's kind of sad. I think we talked about that before. The last one I remember was when all the Matrix movies came out at the same time across the globe. That was in 2003 or whatever, so I can't think of anything more recent.
No. I remember there was two different Darth Maul endings in episode one. I remember that.
Was it really?
One where he got cut in half, and yeah, one where you see him like fall into two pieces, and one where you don't.
Really? I don't remember that at all.
See, yeah, I only ever remember seeing him fall into two pieces. I don't remember seeing another version.
Yeah, there were two of them. I never looked enough into it to figure out why some had one and some had the other. If it was like earlier showings had one or later showings had another. But yeah, I think the more you know. Next on the list is a movie I admit I have never seen. It's Disney's 2002 feature Treasure Planet.
I never saw it either, but I know of people who rave of its.
Yeah, I mean, it was written and directed by Ron Clements and John Musker, who did Little Mermaid and Aladdin. So, I mean, they have some
skill. They got a resume.
Yeah. Treasure Planet is a solid adventure movie about space pirates that got absolutely creamed by the second Harry Potter film and the shittiest James Bond sequel in history. Oops, in the main year. Actually, I don't know what they would mean. 2002. 2002 would be like World Is Not Enough, maybe?
2002 was probably like Die Another Day.
But it was the Pierce Brosnan era. We can both agree. We can all agree on that.
Yeah. Next on the list is a movie I absolutely adore. Let's see if you can get it. Directed by Sam Raimi. Cast includes Sharon Stone, Gene Hackman, Russell Crowe, Leonardo DiCaprio. We're talking
Quick
about
and the Dead.
Yep, Sam Raimi's Quick and the Dead. And this movie is fucking incredible. I love every part of this movie. It's such a badass Western, and yeah, I can't say enough about it. And it's just so much fun. I hope everyone in the world watches this movie, and it's just a great example of just how you can set a Western in like one quick location and make just this engrossing narrative.
It's a shooting competition, right? It's like Wow Gunman the movie.
Yeah, there's like a dueling tournament, and you know the first couple rounds you're not supposed to kill them. It's not until like the later rounds where Gene Hackman changes the rules because he's the mayor and he's the fastest gun in the West, and you know Leonardo DiCaprio thinks he's his son, so he wants to he wants to prove his daddy proud. And Sharon Stone just wants revenge because they made her kind of kill her dad, and yeah.
And Russell Crowe is just like mixed up in it, right?
Well, he used to be Gene Hackman's partner, and so he used to be a really bad dude, but then he found the Lord and became like a preacher, and so he refuses to fight in the tournament. But you know, it is what it is.
But he changed his mind at some point when Leonardo DiCaprio dies.
He doesn't want to get shot dead.
They should just load his body up with Bibles, bulletproof Bibles.
Yeah. The next on the list has maybe some of the most terrifying visuals like in the movie. You know, it's a science fiction horror movie. It's probably the one most people point to as like the best science fiction horror movie, directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. Oh. It stars Sam Neill, Lawrence Fishburne, Event Horizon.
Yeah. Oh, man.
When Sam Neill's got his fucking face cut up and he's in that duct and like Lawrence Fishburne, the lights come on. I'm like, I'm not gonna be able to sleep tonight.
That's a good one. I dig that movie.
I've only seen it once, and I saw it in the theater, so it was a perfect environment for it. And God, when did it come out? 95? Is that what you said?
97.
Okay. I knew it was mid-90s. Huh. To be honest, that movie scarred me so much that I don't know if I'm ever going to watch it again, but I remember enjoying it.
And this is one of the ones that like there's like an aura of mystery around it, because supposedly there was like a darker, more scary, more violent, gory cut. But Paul W.S. Anderson had stated, you know, a couple years ago that the footage wasn't properly cared for, so there's no way to rescue it. The number one on this list of movies that bomb but are considered classics now is 1999's Brad Bird classic, The Iron Giants. Have we all seen The Iron Giant? It is it's a beautiful tale about a man and his giant robot.
And Shooter McGavin's the bad guy.
As he should be.
I've never seen it.
Oh, really? It's really good.
Yeah.
It's a sweet film.
Mm-hmm. It's always amazing how, like, you know, when a sentient being gets captured, and whether it be a robot or a transformer or a fucking whale or whatever, when man interferes and captures and harms, you know, this being, it's always just brings a tear to my eye. I'm like, oh, I can't watch it. I don't like this. Like, fast forward, skip this part. And you know what's going to happen. It happens in every fucking movie. And you're just like, oh, I'm going to get to the part where bad shit happens. And then I'm going to be sad. And, like, that's why I couldn't watch, like, the new Pete's Dragon movie. Because I knew that there's going to be this moment where someone wants to capture this dragon, and it's going to be sad, and then it'll ruin the whole experience for me. I can't be a part of it.
And I can confirm that scene is in the movie.
Yeah, see? And I won't watch it. It's terrible.
Yeah. It is not nearly... It's definitely not, like, 80s bad. Like, if it was in the 80s, you know, they'd be, like, poking it with, like, pitchforks and stuff like that. This is not nearly as bad. And it's your boy Carl Urban captures him.
Are you serious? It's a twofer. So now I'd be like, oh, I hate that guy.
He's no, but you won't, though, because he learns the error of his ways. And he's actually responsible for saving Elliot. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
Peace Dragon is incredible. I know you won't watch it, but just know that it is how you say amazing. Right. Which I think is just amazing. Right. I think that's how you say it.
Magnifico! That's a whole nother word, though.
Yes, yes it is. It is. Hey, so Justin, I know this isn't a video game podcast, but I was... toying with the idea of getting is it Ghost of Tsushima? Am I saying it right? Tsushima. Is that game worth getting?
Yes.
Should I get it?
It's amazing. It is amazing. It is Skyrim with samurai and powder kegs, and I love it. I can't stop playing it. I want to play it right now. I'm thinking about it, and it's hurting me that I'm not playing it. I have put so much time into it. In just like 3 days, I have been protecting my lands and the countryside from the Mongols that have invaded and are ruining everything. The grandson of Genghis Khan has arrived on your shores, and he is wreaking havoc with his armies. And it's up to you, Dave. You know, this mission, should you choose to accept it, would require you to murder many a Mongol.
Goddamn Mongolians.
But it is incredible. It's so fucking good. I love it. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. You can just roam the countryside on your horse and be captivated by all of the magic and beauty that exists on your 4K television set.
Well, I feel terrible that I'm keeping you from this game, so I guess we'll just say goodbye to everybody then. And thank you for joining us for another fun episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Justin needs to go play his game. Follow us at Geek Legacy. Listen to their podcast. Pixelated Podcast, Double Crazy Podcast, and I love you guys all so much. I'm trying to make this in the music outro. Later.